No scores. We go to the bottom of the fifth inning. Jesus Sanchez leads off for the Marlins. First pitch swinging. High drive. Hit deep. Left field. Going. Going. And gone. Jesus Sanchez. An opposite field home run. It's his fifth of the season. And the Marlins have broken a scoreless tie here in the fifth inning. They lead 1-0.
Zach Greinke, once again, pitches pretty well. Had a no-hitter through four innings, but it fell apart in the fifth. Royals defense, three errors, and the Royals score one measly run for Zach, as they always seem to do. One seems like a lot. With Zach on the hill, here's Matt Couture, the manager of the Royals, on the breaking up of Greinke's no-hitter in the tough fifth inning.
Well, I mean, it was a first pitch breaking ball homer, a couple early count hit, you know, base hits. Really, he didn't throw the ball any differently that inning. Maybe one of those pitches might have been left over the middle of the plate, but they got a little more aggressive in that inning and put a couple good swings on it.
So the Royals lose yet again. And do you know that the Royals would have to play 500 baseball the rest of the season to get to 69 wins? They are 18-43. Marlins 34-28. Two teams finished their three-game set at 5-10 tonight in Miami. But yes, the Royals would have to go 500. That means win as many as they lose the rest of the season from early June till the first few days of October just to get to 69 wins. Jordan Lyles, 0-9, ERA of around 7. He's the man to answer our problems. But making $17 million in the process. Texas Rangers ace Jacob DeGrom will have Tommy John surgery to repair the ulnar collateral ligament in his pitching elbow. He'll miss the rest of the season and at least the first 2 months of next season, but likely more. He already had Tommy John surgery in 2010. Rangers signed DeGrom to a five-year, $185 million contract this past offseason. That is guaranteed, by the way. That contract includes a Tommy John surgery clause that now gives Texas a six-year club option worth between $20 to $37 million. Depending on awards voting and innings total, DeGrom, who's 34, made six starts this year, walked only four batters in 30 innings, struck out 45, ERA of 2.67. Despite only getting six starts from DeGrom, the Rangers entered yesterday with baseball's second-best record, 39-20, and a three-and-a-half-game lead over the Astros in the American League West. So the Rangers doing well, but one of the studs they got in the offseason, not doing so well.
That's tough when you go sign a guy like that and then that happens. I mean, you're expecting him to be an ace and help your team throughout the whole season. Like you said, they're doing well, and now you lose a guy like that, and it's... Now you're scrambling to try to make sure it stays going well.
Did you see Steven Strasburg after he got his big deal after the Nationals won the World Series a few years back?
Mm-hmm.
He's barely thrown a lot of innings, hardly any, but it's all guaranteed. It's like $245 million bucks, and that's what's great about baseball. And the union did that really well. It's guaranteed money, and that's why I think it's ridiculous to give gigantic contracts to baseball players because it's fully guaranteed. I mean, Aaron Judge got his big deal, and he deserves it. Otani's going to get a big deal. He deserves it. But it's really silly to me to give gigantic deals to players that are older. Carlos Correa, everybody knew that was a stupid contract that this offseason. And the Mets actually gave more, and then he failed a physical. And then the Twins end up thinking they're brilliant, and they give him this big deal. And he's one of, I think I read the other day, he's like one of the worst hitters in baseball right now based on various numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And he's getting a ton of money. So you just, I mean, I don't understand why you give players that are 30 or older big-time deals. It just doesn't work. I mean, Albert Pujols got a real big deal after 30, and he had a few years where he was awesome. But all in all, he didn't live up to that contract. It's hard for anybody to live up to those type of contracts.
Yeah.
Pitchers, they break down even quicker than position players.
Yeah, there was a span there where it was just ridiculous, the money that was being put out there. Like, I remember Mark Teixeira got one of those contracts, and it's like, what are we doing here? Like, this is insane, the money that's being spent. And I think, you know, it's still being spent in an insane way, I feel like. But there was just a stretch there where it was like, what in the world is going on with baseball contracts? But yeah, it is. That's the tough part, is it's all guaranteed. And it's not, I mean, you know, you're talking about even those bigger contracts, but I mean, the Royals are looking at it right now after releasing Hunter Dozier, right? Like, they gave him the money, and they'd rather get rid of the money and just eat it than keep him on the team right now.
Right.
And so that's another example of guaranteed contracts that are coming back to bite a team. Obviously, that Royals Hunter Dozier contract isn't the scale that we're talking about with DeGrom or Carlos Correa or anything like that, but it's still something against their payroll that they would rather not have on there.
And Dozier was a late bloomer, so they signed him that deal when he was older as well.
Yeah.
Steven Strasburg hasn't pitched in a game since last June. He's 34 years old. He was the World Series MVP. He may never pitch again. He signed a 7-year, $245 million contract to remain with Washington, I believe, in 19 or in 2020. He has pitched 31 and a third innings since he signed a $245 million deal. So if he can never pitch again, and that's the rumor, then he will earn $245 million for throwing 31
innings.
So that would be, let's see, can I do the math here? About $8 million per inning. He'll get paid $8 million per inning if he doesn't pitch again off of his last deal.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he helped him win a World Series, but after that, wow. See, sometimes I'm okay with the Royals not being able to get in on these contract negotiations, because I think nowadays it just doesn't work like it might have done back in the day. All right, coming up, the NBA Finals Game 3 is tonight. We'll break that down. Oklahoma trying to make history in the Women's College World Series down in Oklahoma City. K-State in focus coming up, brought to you by Hanson Auction Realty and Heineken Electric. PGA and the LIV Golf Tours combine. They unify. We'll discuss that. Boy, was that a hot topic yesterday. And everybody's focusing on the Pac-12 teams and the Big 12 looking at Pac-12 schools, but there are a couple other schools that the Big 12 may be picking up sooner than Pac-12 schools, and it pertains a lot to do with basketball powerhouses. We'll discuss that coming up in a little bit. But first, Dusty, we got the 8-man All-Star football games on Saturday. The players have arrived, practiced last night, so I'll throw it to you for now.
Yeah, they're here, ready to go. We have, from our immediate area, 7 athletes that will be competing coming up on Saturday. They're all in the Division II game. Thunder Ridge representatives are all in the West. Dylan Bice, Dalton Bice, and Kayla Wagenblast. And Joel Struckoff is actually an assistant coach on the West squad as well from Thunder Ridge. And Joel's kind of a rare case where, as good as he was, he didn't play in the 8-man All-Star game in high school because he could only have two from your school, and he played in the Shrine Bowl. Yeah. So they tried to share the love a little bit. He played, there was a Kansas-Nebraska game back then. I was talking to him yesterday. I was like, you never played in this, did you? He's like, no, I didn't. He's like, this is actually my first experience here at the 8-man All-Star game, being inside and being part of it. So that's interesting for Joel to have that opportunity now as a coach, since he didn't as a player. And so Thunder Ridge, obviously very well represented with three players and a coach there. And then the rest of our representatives are on the East on the Division II, which would be Connor Scher of Osborne, and then also Cooper Germark and Luke Bates from St. John's Tipton, and Kale Marcus of Pike Valley. So we have stories on Kale of Pike Valley and Cooper and Luke for St. John's Tipton posted at 8manallstars.com, and you can read all about that. And we're going to be going to practices tomorrow and Friday as well, and catching up and seeing how some of these kids are doing and how everything's going this week for them at the 8-man All-Star game. So we're looking forward to it. Again, we'll have coverage coming up on Saturday with pregame at 9:30 and kickoff at 10 o'clock for the Division II game, with the Division I game to follow. And we're pretty excited about everything that's coming up here this week, the 8-man All-Star games, as always. So, 8manallstars.com is the place to go for all of the latest here this week during the 8-man All-Star games. And you can find features, rosters. Hopefully later I'll be able to get some bios posted as well on all these kids trying to take this a step at a time and get everything put up there. And 8manallstars.com, though, is the place to go for all the information and for Saturday's game day coverage here on our stations.
Yeah, we got the 8-man pep rally, 8-man All-Star game pep rally on Friday at 4 o'clock, put on by the Blair Area Chamber of Commerce at Chautauqua Park. It's always a lot of fun. Meet and greet the 8-man All-Stars, the 80 best players in the state. The coaches' staff will be there. There's merchandise for you to buy, or you could win some merchandise with some different giveaways and trivia questions we have. We have some competitions, something new this year for the 8-man All-Stars to compete in coming up on Friday at 4 o'clock. Lasts about an hour, and brought to you by the Belay Area Chamber of Commerce, also Guaranteed State Bank Trust Company, and us here at KD Country 94. Saturday, the game coverage begins with pregame at 9:30, kickoff for the Division II game, which features all of our local players, as you mentioned, will begin at 10 a.m., and then pregame at 1 o'clock, kickoff at 1:30 for the D1 game in the afternoon on Saturday. There is a chance for rain on Saturday, although those chances have lessened in the last 24 hours from what I've seen. Chance for some scattered showers or thunderstorms, but it looks like a high of 80, 82. Wow, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, it would.
Usually it's hotter than heck. Really nice for those guys that have to patrol the sidelines, like, say, a guy named Dusty or Wade for the games coming up on Saturday. So that would be really, really nice. And so you can, we encourage you to go to the games, be there at Trojan Field in Beloit. If you can't make it, listen, KD Country 94, KDCountry94.com. Get the free KD Country 94 app on your smartphones so you can listen to us 24 hours, 7 days a week, wherever you may be. And also, we have worked it out yesterday that we will be doing a live video stream via the Beloit Trojan channel with the games coming up on Saturday. So you can watch them and listen to our play-by-play as well coming up on Saturday, just like we do for Beloit Trojan Athletics throughout the high school season with the eight-man games coming up on Saturday with pregame at 9:30. We should be able to have some replays that we can, some of the highlights that we can send out on Twitter and Facebook, and KD Country 94 Facebook page, and you can follow me on Twitter, NCKS Radio Guy 10, and you can retweet and reshare all of those highlights from the game. Colton Adolph's going to help us with the laptop. He does a wonderful job with that. And so we look forward to that. And Wade Gronewaller is going to help us with the camera. And and Todd and Dusty and myself will have a lot of fun. And we look forward to covering the All-Star Games coming up on Saturday, the 38th annual eight-man All-Star Games. You know, technically there's 37 games because there wasn't one in 2020. But as Dusty was telling me the other day, because we were talking about this, you could say it's the 37th annual. You could say it's the 38th annual. I guess you just want to depend on how you want to look at it. Because in 2020, they did have all the selections. There was rosters. I mean, there was everything set out there. It's just that we ended up did not play games. But you also could say, well, we didn't play games that year, so wouldn't it be the 37th annual because you take off a year? But at the same time, we did go through all of the pomp and circumstance of there were selections and picked and so forth and so on. So, you know, whatever way you want to go with it, I don't care. I'm not that big a deal. You want to call it the 38th, great. You want to call it 37th, great. Bottom line is it's been here over 30 years, almost 40 years at Trojan Field in Beloit. It started in 1986. It used to be just one game, went to two games, and we've had only two games that have gone overtime in the history of the eight-man All-Star games, which is, you would think there might be a few more than that. And all the records and stats and rosters, as Dusty said, anything imaginable, profiles, right there, eightmanallstars.com. Anything else you want to add?
No, I think that covered it. I know the kids they're rare and ready to go. Some of them teams were already, you know, getting some unity yesterday when I saw them right when they had their first meeting. So it's always fun to kind of see that first meeting and then kind of see them at the banquet on Friday, how close they've become and how good of friends they already are.
Absolutely.
It's a short period of time, but they learn to know each other and obviously create friendships for the rest of their lives. So it was actually, I've never been there like right away like I was yesterday. I usually wait until they go out to the field to take pictures, but it was fun to see that yesterday, to see how quickly they kind of get to know each other. And I think social media obviously has had a big impact on them knowing each other before they even get here. So,
well, and I saw them walking the Dairy Queen, Sonic, and Dollar General last night. So they're in our midst. They are here, and we look forward to all that, and so many people to thank. And you know, obviously, NCK Tech for hosting the kids and all the great meals. And we're going to enjoy one of those today at the Rotary Lions combined lunch. And we'll interview coaches for pregame interviews, things like that. And so it's always fun, and the food's always great there as well. All right, after two nights off, the NBA Finals roll on this evening. Game 3, Miami and the Nuggets, the Heat hosting in Miami for Game 3. The series tied 1-1, and that tips off 7:30 tonight on ABC. Tyler Hero, who has a broken hand, he's missed most of the playoffs, ruled out for Game 3. Maybe he could play Game 4. He's been worried about hurting the team's chemistry, which means he's a team player. Kevin Love, will he start again for the Heat? I'd say why not. Michael Porter, will he be more aggressive and not settling? Will he cut more to the bucket instead of sitting out on the three-point line? That's a couple questions I have. How will the Heat defend Jokic? And can the Nuggets play better defense in the fourth quarter? Their defense in the fourth quarter, the first two games of the series, has not been good. And then there's the question of Jimmy Butler's been kind of a pedestrian player so far through the first two games. I mean, he should get more credit for his defense of Jamal Murray in game two. He's just kind of let the game come to him. He hasn't forced anything. He hasn't taken over. Will he explode tonight or in game four and carry the Heat to a win? And usually role players play better at home. And the Heat role players played pretty dang well in game two on the road. Imagine what they could do at home tonight. I think this is a gigantic game in the series. A good friend of mine in Kansas City, him and I were texting back and forth last night. He believes coaching is the difference in this series, and he thinks Miami has a huge edge. And so he has the Heat winning. I think the winner of game three tonight wins the series. I've said it before, I think this is a gigantic game for the Nuggets to regain their mojo. And I was asked by my friend in Kansas City, he said, well, what do you think? You know, you still got the Nuggets, or are you changing to the Heat? And I said, you know, I'm still going to go with the Nuggets. I picked them in six before the series began. I said, but here's what makes me really nervous. Jamal Murray's probably going to play better tonight. That doesn't make me nervous. That makes me feel good. Mm-hmm. Jokic is going to be like Jokic. He's going to be fine, but I'd like him to have 27 points instead of 47. But here, and I said this before the series began, for the Heat to have a chance in the series, two things had to happen. One, Bam Adebayo has to play really, really, really well or great, and he has. And the other thing I said is the Nuggets role players have to be held in check. That meant Caldwell Pope, Aaron Gordon, and Michael Porter Jr. Those are the three. Those are the three other starters. There's Bruce Brown off the bench. But those are the main three, other than Jamal Murray and Jokic, those are the other three starters. And in game one, Aaron Gordon had a pretty big game. Game two, he did not. Michael Porter has been missing in action, 3 for 17 from three. And so as I told my friend from Kansas City last night, I said, this is going to sound crazy. You say that the X factor is coaching. You very well might be right. Eric Spoelstra so far has probably outcoached Mike Malone. I think the Nuggets have the better roster. So did the Boston Celtics. So did the Milwaukee Bucks. It didn't matter. But this is the scary part for me. Now that I look at this series, and I talked about the role players for the Nuggets having to play well or not playing so well, and that's the key for the Heat. Jokic and Murray get theirs fine. Hold the other three or four key guys in check. Now I have shrunk it down to a more specific key for the Nuggets, and this is why I'm nervous as heck. I think the Nuggets win this series if Michael Porter Jr. figures some things out, and I'm not really confident about that. Because if Michael Porter Jr. continues to play like he's played in the first two games, I think the Nuggets lose the series. Because he's got to hit open shots. Mm-hmm. He's got to be active offensively. He is a liability at times defensively. He even said his energy wasn't that great the other night. I'm like, how in the hell can your energy not be very good in game two of the NBA Finals after 2 days off? But everybody's human. Maybe he didn't get a lot of sleep. Maybe he had some family issues. Who knows? We never do know those things, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, you may say, well, how the heck, like I just said, how the heck can that be when it's game two of the finals? He might have a lot of things going on. Who knows? Maybe he wasn't feeling well. But Michael Porter Jr. is kind of an enigma his whole career. In college, he barely played. He had a back injury. He had injuries, barely played at Missouri. One and done, went to the NBA, drafted by the Nuggets, been injury-prone first part of his career, started to figure it out the last couple of years, and I think there's no coincidence that's helped the Nuggets to become a team that could take that next step. But Michael Porter Jr., so far in the series, has not played well. And if he plays well, the Nuggets, I think, win the series. Because you know Murray's going to be good most of the time. You know Jokic is going to be that guy. Caldwell Pope's usually solid defensively. Bruce Brown's been good off the bench. Aaron Gordon's still usually going to get... It's not like he disappears totally. Mm-hmm. But the guy that does is Michael Porter Jr. And Michael Porter Jr. has to be more aggressive. He has to provide more energy. And one of the things that's really crazy, my son told me the other day, that he goes, did you know Michael Porter Jr.'s never had more than two assists in an NBA game? I don't know if that's true, but that's what he told me. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised. He used to take some really bad shots early in his NBA career. He still takes a few of those quick trigger threes, but it's been a lot better. But I'll tell you the place where Michael Porter Jr. could really improve, and that's rebounding. I mean, as big as he is, athletic as he is, he just doesn't get his nose in there as often as mm-hmm. you'd hope for. And when he's aggressive and active, he is a different player. And he was non-existent in game two. In game one, he didn't play very well. So if Michael Porter Jr. plays better, the Nuggets win this series. That's my bold prediction. But if he continues to play as he has been the first two games, I don't care how great Murray and Jokic are, the Heat are winning the series. Because I don't think two guys, when we saw it, Durant and Booker couldn't do it by themselves. You need other people to do it. You know, the Heat have a collection of Gabe Vincent, undrafted guys, Duncan Robinson, Gabe Vincent, Caleb Martin, making a whole bunch of threes. And Jimmy Butler only has to score 20 points like he did the other night, or 21 and win. Bam has 21-9. So the Heat are actually, believe it or not, the more balanced team offensively. And that's why they like to get Jokic to have 40 and take 28 shots. Oh, because yeah, that means other guys aren't involved. But part of the reason why those other guys aren't involved is because, in some cases, they take themselves out of the game because they stop cutting and moving without the ball. And that's what Michael Porter did the other night. And he even admitted to it after the game. So Michael Porter Jr., keep an eye on him tonight. If he plays well, Nuggets win, in my opinion. He doesn't play very well, I think Heat are up 2-1, and I think the Heat win the series.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. If KCP has an offensive game here or there, that could maybe change sure. that dynamic of it. If he could pick up the slack that maybe if Porter's right. not having a good game. But that's about the only guy I think that would do that. Because like you said, Gordon never really disappears. Like he's not going to have like a 2-point game probably right. that's going to be added to what Porter Jr. is doing, right?
So you're focused on offense right there, though. My thing is the whole package. It's Michael Porter Jr. He's been missing in action on both
sure,
sides of
sure.
the ball. So, yeah, I agree with you. You can compensate for, Porter doesn't get 15 that you're hoping to get. Yeah, Pope can get an extra 8, and Gordon can get an extra 6, and you can compensate for it. You can't compensate for it defensively.
No, not if he's not focused on that end of the floor. Yeah.
The only way you compensate for it is he's on the bench and somebody else is in. Well, I mean, Michael Porter is 6'10".
Yeah. But you're definitely taking away offense when yes. you go to the bench, for sure.
Sure.
No question about it. Like, yes. you could bring Christian Brown in, and he'll play good defense
Bruce
for you.
Bruce Brown can give him good
And Bruce
good
would,
points.
Too, yeah. But those guys aren't coming in going to give you 15, 20 points a night, right?
On a regular situation.
Yeah. So, but, yeah, I mean, that's clear. I mean, I think the Nuggets as a whole have times where they just have defensive lapses. And,
yes.
and that, they can't do that, right? Like, that's what's going to hurt them in a 7-game series if they – just if that becomes the norm for them.
Yes.
And it hasn't so far in the really all season and definitely not in the postseason. But there's been times where it's like, man, they're just not focused on that end of the floor. And I don't think that's just Michael Porter Jr., but it does add to it. If he's not doing anything offensively, then mm-hmm. then you do get a guy that, I mean, there's been several guys that I've seen at the high school, college level. It's like, if they're not playing well offensively, mm-hmm. they're not helping your team at all.
And that's the thing.
Yeah. And so that's where it's got to come from, for Porter, obviously, is to get I think if he gets some confidence offensively, maybe his focus and his attention to detail on the other end of the floor gets a little bit better, too, because he's, not struggling on the other end. You see that so many times, too, where a guy's, like, struggling offensively, and then he just lets it slip to the other side of the other end of the floor, and it's like, yeah, you just got to stay focused and play no matter what and try to let that come back to you.
The great players don't do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Michael Porter Jr. is not a great player.
No,
he's a solid, good player. He averaged 17 points a game this year. So far in the first two games of the series against Miami, he shot 5 of 16 in game 1, 2 of 11 from 3. Game 2, 2 of 8, 1 of 6 from 3. In the series, he's 7 of 24 from the floor, 3 of 17 from 3. He did have 13 rebounds in game 1, so he at least contributed somehow, some way. He did have 14 points, but it took him 16 shots. That's not a very efficient night. Mm-hmm. But he did have 13 rebounds. But game 2, 5 points, no assist, shocking. He had 6 rebounds, and the Nuggets were negative 15 with him on the floor.
Yeah.
So he's got to be. Game 1, he wasn't horrible. Game 2, he was not good at all. And he's going to have to play better for the Nuggets to win this series, in my opinion. All right, Women's College World Series Championship Series begins as Oklahoma looks for the third consecutive NCAA softball championship. The Sooners have an NCAA record 51-game winning streak heading in to tonight's Game 1 of the best of 3 in Oklahoma City. Game 1 at tonight at 7 o'clock on ESPN. Oklahoma taking on the Seminoles of Florida State. Oklahoma is a heavy favorite to win their third straight softball championship. It's time for K-State in Focus. Our focus on Kansas State athletics, brought to you by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit. Well, we told you last week that Tyson Nabors, who had 11 saves and K-State's best pitcher this year, and he was a stopper out of the bullpen, he was named as a third-team All-American. Well, USA Baseball announced yesterday that K-State third baseman Kalen Culpepper has received an official invite to the 2023 Collegiate National Team Training Camp. Culpepper is an epitome of K-State baseball, said head coach Pete Hughes. We are so proud that his everyday investment in our program and community will be on full display at a national level. He is the second member from the Wildcat roster to attend this training camp, joining relief pitcher Tyson Nabors, who I just mentioned. Culpepper and Nabors are just the second and third players in school history to be invited since K-State Hall of Famer inductee Craig Wilson in 1988. Wilson was drafted by the White Sox in 92, represented Team USA in the 1991 Pan Am Games, and was a member of the U.S. Olympic baseball team that competed in Barcelona in 1992. Culpepper, a two-time All-Big 12 honorable mention selection, coming off a standout sophomore campaign, started in 40 games, finished the year hitting .325, 10 homers, 41 RBIs. His slugging percentage led the Wildcats, and his batting average ranked second. And here's the other thing. He missed a significant time due to a hand injury. So he is a rising star there for the K-State baseball team. And now he gets an invite to the USA baseball training camp site. So pretty exciting stuff for Kalen Culpepper. Our focus on K-State athletics today, as always, brought to you every Wednesday by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction and Realty in Beloit. Okay, two big stories to get to close out the show here today. This story broke during the show yesterday. I was stunned. If you go back and listen, I'm absolutely was stunned when I read it. I thought it was a parody Twitter account, satire account that was making something up, and I didn't trust it at first. But it is apparently real. After a legal battle that lasted more than a year, the PGA, LIV Golf, and the DP World Tour have agreed to merge and start a new professional golf entity moving forward. The tours say the agreement will be better for larger commercial business and is a landmark agreement on a global basis. PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan said, and I quote, "There's been a lot of tension in our sport over the last couple of years. What we're talking about today is coming together to unify the game of golf and to do so under one umbrella." Interestingly, the deal between the tours and Saudi Arabia's public investment fund was agreed upon without many PGA and LIV golf players and agents being in the know. It was kept on the down low, very secretive. All three circuits did note the agreement ends all pending litigation between the parties. Monahan stressed that yesterday's announcement takes a competitor off of the board while giving the PGA Tour more control of its direction moving forward. He said, and I quote, "If you just look at just the environment that we're in, the PIF was controlling LIV Golf and we were competing against LIV." Monahan told reporters yesterday in a press conference, "I felt very good about the changes we made and the position that we're in, but ultimately to take the competitor off the board, to have them exist as a partner, not an owner, and for us to be able to control the direction going forward, put us in a position as a PGA Tour to do and serve our members, and at the same time, again, get to a productive position for the game at large," end of quote. LIV's golf debut in 2022 was accompanied by widespread accusations of sports washing, the use of sports as propaganda to improve an entity's reputation amid human rights scandals, and more, given its funding from the public investment fund known as PIF. The PGA Tour, under Monahan's direction, prohibited players from competing on both the PGA Tour and LIV Golf, and later introduced designated events with elevated purses in an effort to minimize LIV Golf defections. Monahan, the PGA commissioner, acknowledged yesterday, the scrutiny resulting from the PGA Tour's sudden embrace of LIV Golf after taking a decidedly different stance throughout roughly the past year, but challenged critics to keep the long-term impact of the merger in mind. He said, and I quote, "I recognize that people are going to call me a hypocrite. Anytime I've said anything, I've said it with the information I've had at the moment, and I've said it as someone who is trying to compete for the PGA Tour and our players. I accept those criticisms, but circumstances do change. Looking at the big picture and looking at it this way, that's what got us to this point." End of quote. Now, he had a meeting. There's a golf tournament. I forgot where it's at. He had a meeting with PGA Tour players yesterday late afternoon. According to various reports, it was a very heated meeting. There were some PGA Tour players that were demanding that he quit and get new leadership, and that was met with a standing ovation by some. Jack Nicklaus has come out and said, "Listen, you know, no matter how you look at this, ultimately this is good for the game of golf because you won't have two, you know, fighting entities," mm-hmm. which I would agree with him. But it's hard to avoid seeing all the things that were said by the commissioner of PGA Tour, and then, you know, Roy McIlroy, I think, has got to be one of the most upset people. He was kind of the speaker of PGA Tour golf, and reportedly Rory turned down, LIV Golf offered $500 million. Tiger was offered $800 million. I mean, this is a billion. This is well over a billions of funds in this PIF. And so there's other players that could have gone. Justin Thomas, Ricky Fowler, Jordan Spieth, Max Homa, and others. And they stayed loyal to the tour. Now, they're all going to play again together. They don't get the $200 million that Phil Mickelson got. There's supposedly going to be a fines for those guys that come back. But it ain't going to be a $200 million fine on Phil Mickelson. So the players got to feel like, well, we should have, you know, all along we were taking the high road, we thought. We were doing what was right. We fought for our beliefs. And then we were sold out. I mean, that's how it comes across. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And I want to pull up something here, and I'm going to play it for you if I can find it. Yes, so I'm going to play this right here. Mina Kimes, I thought, really put this I mean, this is what I think a lot of people feel, including PGA Tour players. Let me play this. This was from, I forget what is the name of the show, Around the Horn on ESPN. This is what Mina Kimes, I'll admit, Mina Kimes, I think, is one of the few people on ESPN that isn't afraid to speak her mind.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what she had to say.
I mean, watching Jay Monahan, the commissioner, try to justify this, I think I'm struck by two things. He managed to both sell out morally and also sell out his own constituency at the same time, which is truly remarkable for a commissioner. I mean, put yourself in the shoes, as Tim said, of a PGA golfer who turned down live money. Over the last year plus, you have believed you were taking a principled stand. You have watched your peers accept, in some cases, hundreds of millions of dollars to link arms with a regime with a terrible human rights record. You may have spoken out against that record, and you have been told yours is a player-run organization. Today, you wake up and you realize that was all a lie. And if I were them, I would be seriously questioning leadership, not just for this decision, but the way in which it was rolled out.
I totally get what you're saying. I mean, I think that's how all the PGA Tour players, for the most part, feel. Some put out there on Twitter, they said, oh, nice to know that we read this on Twitter.
Yeah.
It was top.
So Colin Morikawa was like, it's nice to read the top news of the day on Twitter.
Yes. But they wanted to keep this confidential. And at the end of the day, you know, like somebody said, well, LIV Golf disappears. LIV Golf was, and I tried to say this way back. I said LIV Golf is not going to last, and that's true now. I said it was not going to last because I thought it was a gimmick, and there were people trying to tell me, oh no, this is gonna take down the PGA Tour, and it's gonna be the elite tour and everything else. I'm like, no, it's a gimmick. But what I didn't realize, and now I feel foolish not realizing it, but now I realize it. This was the whole plan all along, in my opinion. They wanted influence, the Saudi Arabian folks that are involved, all right? And now this guy's going to be the chairman. He's going to be a chairman tied to the PGA Tour from Saudi Arabia. They are the main investor of the PGA Tour now. They're funneling in tons of money, so they can pay players even more. So that's good for all the players going forward from this point forward, even if you weren't on LIV Golf. It does seem, all this talk about, well, this is, you know, we're not, Jay Monahan said it many times about 9/11 and everything that happened on that day and, you know, defending the families that lost loved ones. Now Monahan and the PGA looks like they're no different than Mickelson and Koepka and all these other guys. They sold out for the money. And, you know, I'm not surprised. I mean, I was surprised yesterday. I was, because I didn't see it coming. Mm-hmm. But I'm not surprised at the end result, because it's always about the money. Ladies and gentlemen, as much as you hate it, and trust me, I hate it as much as you do, it's always about the Benjamins. It's always about the money. You can take this high standing morale road, and you can sit here and say, I would never take that money. And, you know, in fairness, Roy McIlroy, Tiger Woods, of course, in fairness, Roy McIlroy and Tiger Woods have plenty of money. Would they like another half a billion? Sure. So they did turn that stuff down reportedly. But they weren't, you know, just trying to get by on the PGA Tour. Like,
no.
If anybody was just starting to get on PGA Tour that was trying to fight to stay on the tour, had they been approached by LIV Golf, they would have taken whatever offer LIV Golf offered immediately without even thinking 2 seconds about it. And that doesn't mean it's right, but it means that you're looking out for yourself. And I've talked about this before. There are people that sell their land and sell their houses, and they don't care who buys them. They don't care if it's a horrible person. They don't care if it's somebody that's, you know, been in trouble with the law. They don't care if it's somebody that is embezzled money somewhere else. As long if they're, you know, not in jail and their funds clear the bank, I will sell to the highest bidder. Now, there are exceptions. There are people that, like, you know what? I really don't like that person. I'll take the second highest bid. Or there's no way in heck I'm selling this or this to such and such. Okay? There are exceptions. But I think it's safe to say the majority of Americans are selling out to the highest bidder. So all these people that are criticizing Jay Monahan and the PGA Tour, I understand it. I get it. And I totally agree with Mina Kimes. This is what it looks like. It's all front. It's a big, fat lie. At the same time, those that are yelling at the commissioner about basically taking this money, people that yelled at Brooks Koepka and Phil Mickelson for taking this money, and Dustin Johnson, as we said back then when it happened, and I'll stay here today and be true and consistent with my message on this, you would have done more than likely the same thing, unless you already were a multi-made millionaire like Rory McIlroy and Tiger Woods. Thus, you maybe could have felt like you could turn it down and take the high road because of what you truly believed in. But you had to have the financial security to do that.
Mm-hmm.
If you were starting out, or if you're an up-and-coming golfer, and you weren't making a ton of money on the tour, and Live Golf came to you and said, we'll give you $25 million, or even $10 million, or $100 million, you know what? You would have been like, oh, and I get free jet, and I get a party on a jet, I don't have to play as many events, and I only have to play three rounds of golf instead of four? Where do I sign up?
Mm-hmm.
So don't be hypocrites yourself, America. That's the one thing. Everybody's talking about Jay Monahan being a hypocrite, and there's no doubt he is. There's no doubt, based on everything he said, yeah, absolutely. And he even admits it. I'll give Jay Monahan credit. He's taking the shots. He knew it was coming. He ain't stupid. He knew it was coming. He knew through this whole process that was what was going to happen once the information was leased to the public. He's taking the arrows. He's taking the bullets. And he may or may not survive as commissioner. I think he will somehow. But he knows he's a hypocrite. Absolutely. As he said, circumstances change. When you can eliminate a competitor, but yet get a lot of their money, hell, that's win-win. I mean, it is. Business-wise, mm-hmm. It's win-win. And you may sit out there, and you might be sitting there in North Central Kansas listening to the show, and you're like, this is a bunch of hogwash. That's crap. Saudi Arabians, there's no way. And it's like, you know what? If I or anyone else came to you that you're not like all cool with, but I can assure you, you're going to get millions of dollars, you're probably not turning me down. Probably not. There might be one or two people that might. Some will jump at the opportunity, most. There'll be a few that might think about longer, and there'll be a few that'll be like, okay, I'm not going there yet. And I respect that. But a majority of Americans would be just like Jay Monahan. You're running a business. You can eliminate the competition, which I don't think was super great competition, but it certainly drew players that you wanted to play on PGA Tour events, then went to Live Golf, so it did hurt you, no doubt. There was an impact. You can eliminate the competition, and you can then get more funding for your tour so players can be paid better, and they're going to compete and go after it, and you get all your players back on the same tour for the guys that defected to Live Golf. This is a win-win for the PGA Tour across the board. Did they take a PR hit, the commissioner in particular, because they look like hypocrites, like they're taking blood money, as they actually said themselves when Phil Mickelson and Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, among others, did it? Absolutely, they're hypocrites. But we as Americans are hypocrites if we sit here and say, as a business, if we had an opportunity to eliminate the competition. Think about any business you run or you work for. If you have a chance to eliminate the competition and, in essence, be a monopoly, and that's what this is now. It's a monopoly. You're the only game in town.
Listen, it's a golf monopoly.
It's a golf monopoly.
PGA monopoly.
Right. It's a golf monopoly. Yeah. It's all combined and unified.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really, you know, when you listen, we know what Walmart was built on, and that was coming into towns and eliminate the competition to be the only game in town, right?
Sure.
Walmart do the same thing. This is no different. It's just that it's the Saudi Arabian tie that bothers some people, and it bothers me too, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah.
And I don't like it. I think I'm not even involved, and I feel dirty. I feel dirty that the PGA Tour is doing this. But I understand it from a business standpoint. It's no difference than people selling their land to people from China. And that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Or investors from other countries. You're not selling it to Americans. You're selling it to outside international investors, whatever. That happens a lot. Or people that have come over that are citizens, but then there are theories that maybe they're buying the land for various reasons, whatever you want to think there. But this was what Live Golf wanted all along. From what I've read, I've studied this since last night. They threw a whole bunch. They weren't going to keep funding Live Golf forever. This was their end game. They wanted influence on the PGA Tour. They wanted to be a part of golf. They forced their way in. They came up with a cool gimmick, which is Live Golf. They're able to throw a ton of money, oil money, blood money, whatever you want to call it, towards a whole bunch of noteworthy players and convince them to come join their tour. Then speak highly enough of ripping the PGA Tour for some of their policies in the past, including Phil Mickelson. Well, the happiest guys on earth's got to be Phil Mickelson today. Like, hell, I told you so, boys. Look at this. I got my money, and we're all going to get everything back. He looks like a genius right now.
Yeah.
And this was the end game all along. Live Golf never was planning on being in business for 10, 20 years. That was never the goal.
No, not that long.
No, it was never the goal. I had a couple people tell me, oh, they're going to take out, they're going to be the new PGA Tour. I said, no, they're not. No, they're not. First one in usually wins. It was a great move by them. And now you've got this PIF that's going to be a main investor of the PGA Tour. You don't think there's influence there in what things are done? And now this guy who was, I guess, help running the Live Golf or help come up with the idea, he's going to be the chairman. He's going to be a chairman on the PGA board or whatever you want to call it, whatever they label it. You don't, I mean, he's in. They got all kinds of influence on golf. And now it's one big unified entity, which means that it should take off even more. And guess what? They'll make money off of it, more than likely. Or they'll benefit in various many other ways. These people aren't stupid. The people that started Live Golf are not stupid. All right? Now, it helps to have a lot of money to back up to make a bold move like this. Mm-hmm. But they got what they wanted. This is the end game. The end game was never for Live Golf to outlast PGA Tour. The goal was to have more influence in the golfing industry. And remember, golf is a rich man's sport. Now, you might not be rich and you play at the, you know, you play at the local course in Osborne or Cocker City or Beloit. But golf is considered by many, especially back in the day. And, of course, clearly when you have your private clubs and it's expensive to play, your clubs are expensive to pay. You got to pay for golf carts. You got to pay for memberships. If you go to any kind of private clubs in, say, Kansas City, it's kind of pricey. It's considered a rich man's sport. And now we got rich people in Saudi Arabia. Now they have more influence on a sport that's in America, and that's called the PGA Tour. They got what they wanted. You know, everybody got played in a way a little bit. But at the end of the day, I think the group that got played the least were the people that created Live Golf. They've got to be ecstatic.
What you just said is where I need to go. And I want to present this because I think Jay Moynihan saying we've eliminated the competition is just the ultimate spin. Mm-hmm. Like, you have joined the competition and let them run your organization. You've not eliminated the competition at all. You've done what they wanted to do. They've joined you. Liv, the only thing that went away from Liv is the name Liv.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that's going to go away.
Well, they eliminated the competition in regards to there's not going to be a whole bunch of Liv golf tournaments.
Yeah.
So
that's
no,
that's going to be gone.
Tour.
Some of those things are going to be
and
gone.
That's what he means by
but,
that.
But my interpretation when he says that is we've eliminated the competition. We're the PGA. We're the biggest here. We're the best and all this. Okay, but you're still taking every opportunity to use what Liv wanted to do with the PIF, right? They're going to be the heaviest funder of this new league.
Absolutely.
They are. They wanted their seat at the table, and now you're letting this guy that created it be a part of your board and a part of everything. You've not eliminated Liv. Mm-hmm. You maybe, like you said, you've eliminated some of their actual competitions, the events that they're going to do. But this is a complete merger, and you have joined Liv and what they do with the PIF and all these guys that left. And I think the guys like Phil Mickelson are the same. Like, they're like, okay, I'm going to go here.
Yeah.
And eventually this is going to overwhelm the PGA.
Because there's so much money.
Because there's so much money. Mm-hmm. And they don't want, and again, like I said yesterday, when a guy like Brooks Koepka, who's part of Liv, is winning these major tournaments and he's not a member of your organization, you got to do something. You got to change that. And now, You know, Jay Moynihan's obviously changed his tune about everything as the year has gone by, and they understand what this actually means when Live golfers are winning PGA, the PGA Championship, right?
Right.
it's not part of the. It's not technically a PGA Tour event, but it's called the PGA Championship, and a Live golfer won it. And the optics of that don't look great for the PGA,
right?
And I just do. I think because Liv got what they wanted and changed the game, they won this deal.
Oh, I agree.
And,
totally.
And what you said at the end is exactly what you said, right? They got what they wanted and they
absolutely
did what they needed. And so for Jay Moynihan to say we've eliminated the competition is just not – I don't read it probably the same way that you
do.
I just don't like that wording because I don't think he eliminated anything.
I think technically he's right because he's saying that there's not going to be competing tour events on another tour. We're eliminating that tour. But I agree with you. All you're doing is you're both joining each other. So you could argue they're
and
both
whatever this other tour is that nobody's ever talked about before.
You could say that they're both joining the competition technically.
Absolutely.
I mean they're joining. You're unifying. But here, oh darn, pop up. ads. I love it. The two entities signed an agreement that would combine the PGA Tours and LIV Golf's commercial businesses and rights into a new, yet-to-be-named, for-profit company that does include the DP World Tour, also known as the PGA European Tour. So it's all
that's
one
PGA Europe. I didn't understand what the name was.
But here's what people need to understand. LIV Golf is backed by the Saudi Arabia Public Investment Fund, an entity controlled by the Saudi Crown Prince, and has been embroiled in antitrust lawsuits with the PGA Tour the past year. With this deal announced yesterday, it would end all pending litigation, and the Public Investment Fund from Saudi Arabia is prepared to invest billions, with a B, as Austin Powers would say, billions of new capital into the new entity. Yes, that's right. Now, this will require the approval of the PGA Tour Policy Board, which I understand is made up of five players and five non-players. So this is technically not done. There's a lot of framework to still work out. And this won't go in effect immediately. They're going to finish the 2023 season. Then everybody should be on board with one big entity for next year for the golf season. Here's what worries me. And I told you this after the show yesterday. I understand it's great for golf. I get it. For the overall sport, it's great. It's great for the players. Yeah. I mean, it's all, everybody's going to play and compete the best for the best. There's not going to be competing entity tours and things like that. I get that. So if you're a golf fan, you might actually be okay with it. But how quickly, it didn't take long, a couple years, for a public investment fund from Saudi Arabia with a prince to now muscle their way in with their money and have influence now on a sport in America.
Global influence, like, well, everywhere.
Right, but I'm just saying country I live in. But
yeah,
absolutely,
for America.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and there's a lot of, I'm guessing there's a lot of,
talking Europe too.
You know, people in Europe that have the same feelings absolutely. We do about the Saudi government. Right,
right. So here's the scary part. What's next?
Yeah.
Because if they got billions upon billions of dollars, why wouldn't they go after a soccer league? Why wouldn't they go after Major League Baseball? Why wouldn't they go after the NBA? I mean, where does it end? Now, golf is a more widely known sport across the world, so this one makes sense to start with.
But and not I'm a just lot of established here. Stuff right. like we were talking about off the air yesterday, right. too, like players' unions and things right. like that. There's not, that doesn't happen in right. golf, so it's easy to right. to be like, hey, throw this money at these people because there's no cap or there's nothing that...
There's no players' union.
Some players' union is going to stick right. up for this guy.
You're right.
And you can't leave and go to this league.
Right. Right. However, I think money can trump any, even a union can eventually sure. can be trumped. But I think there is a little bit of a dangerous precedent that I'm worried about there. But this is crazy, crazy stuff. It's, boy, yeah, I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall in that meeting yesterday. Holy shnikes. All right. Anything else on that?
No.
Okay. Well, the Big 12's interest in recruiting Pac-12 teams remains. Adding Gonzaga, basketball only, and UConn full membership is dominating Big 12 conversations. The Big 12 continues to wait for the Pac-12 to reveal, as the whole world, to reveal a new media rights figure to its members before taking the next step in that pursuit. Meanwhile, the Big 12 has been aggressive, more aggressive lately, and pursuing their basketball interests, especially after last week's Big 12 spring meetings. Commissioner Brett Yormark reiterated that expansion has been discussed. There has been mutual admiration at the presidential level between Gonzaga and the Big 12. However, there is stronger momentum for UConn, the reigning men's national champion, to join the Big 12 than Gonzaga at the moment. Yormark has a distinct long-term basketball vision, one that ultimately includes separate media rights contracts for basketball and football. That's never been done, at least in the modern era of the Power Five. Basketball has always lagged behind in valuation, with the football being the primary revenue generator. But Yormark believes, with the interest of streaming properties on the rise, college basketball will be worth more to more suitors in the future. There are those in the industry who disagree. One key issue to consider, any movement in separating media rights would have to wait at least 7 years until the Big 12's new media rights deal expires in 2031. UConn is entering year 4 in its return to the Big East, would reportedly owe the Big East at least $30 million in exit fees if it went to the Big 12. That's for an athletic department, reportedly $53 million in the red already. So that makes you wonder, how's that going to work? What do you think of this thought process for Yormark? I think, to me, real quickly, is he's trying to add as many powerhouses in basketball. He's building it so that he can do what he wants in 2031. Or, they say 2031. Well, the other deal hadn't expired, and he renegotiated and did a new deal. So when they say, well, they can't do no until 21, that's bullcrap. You can do something before 2031. Absolutely.
They act like all these years are just like set in stone.
They're not.
I mean, if that was the case, Oklahoma and Texas wouldn't be leaving.
That's exactly right.
I mean, it's still, you can't. Listen, I know that the UConn athletic department, whatever, $50-some million in debt, and you'd add a $30 million exit fee, whatever. Big 12 will figure that out if they really want them.
Sure they will.
Right? Any conference, if you really want them, is going to figure out that money. Yeah. It seems like a lot, and it is a lot of money. Like for us, it's like unreal amounts of money.
Yep.
But for the landscape of where college football and basketball and college sports are right now, it's not. They'll figure it out with TV deals. They'll figure out how, hey, we're going to take this from you this year, but you know, in 2 years, you're going to make all of this money and probably double, maybe triple of it back because we're going to have a bigger brand. We're going to have mm-hmm. a better brand, mm-hmm. and you're going to make this money. So you can, if you can talk with your schools that are part of the member institutions in your conference already mm-hmm. and say, hey, it's going to suck losing maybe $5, $10 million this year, but in 3 years, you're going to make 50 more. And it's like, okay, I think we can make the conception. We can concede that for now. I love any type of expansion you can have that's going to make the conference better. Mm-hmm. And so I think the going about it that way is the right way. And what's interesting to me is like UConn's already applied to join this league, this conference, mm-hmm. and it's like these teams that have and you know I think Cincinnati did it before they actually were approved when Brett Bielmark came in and they you know teams left and then. But this was before Oklahoma and Texas had left, but I get that. But I don't think when Bob Bowlesby was there and they sent that big old call out, you know, to have people submit their applications to join the conference, I don't think they did a lot with that. I don't think they looked a lot at it because they had Oklahoma and Texas and they didn't care. Mm-hmm. And so now it's like, okay, well, we're welcoming UConn now. We have a different regime. And it's just interesting to see some of these old schools that are coming back in and have such a better chance to get in now. Without Oklahoma and Texas, but can also strengthen the conference and get you a better TV deal.
Well, think about this for a second. There a report the other day that Colorado and Arizona are going to join the Big 12. Now, that's not done yet.
Yeah.
If, in fact, that were true, though, and then you and Gonzaga would join on for basketball, now Gonzaga would have Colorado and Arizona and BYU. They would have teams out their way to play. Mm-hmm. Okay. So it wouldn't like they'd be traveling all the time everywhere. If you add UConn in, that would be football and basketball across the board, whereas Gonzaga would be basketball. Mm-hmm. UConn don't have a great football program, so that doesn't help a lot. But if you add UConn and Gonzaga, obviously you got a west time zone. There's your four time zones. And now think about the geography of the Big 12. It would go from Gonzaga, Spokane, Washington,
yeah.
all the way to Connecticut, down to South or Central Florida, and then West Virginia. I mean, you just start doing the whole thing, and you're like, holy cow. The only thing you don't have is, you know, to the north, I guess, because you don't have Nebraska
anymore. Yeah, you go.
Which is that big a deal?
Cincinnati
would
probably be the furthest north,
be.
I guess.
That would be.
And obviously, Cincinnati and West Virginia is a good fit to
right.
have some rivalries to build here. Mm-hmm. They're close to each other.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you go north. I guess north would be northwest, too, to Spokane, Washington.
Yeah,
but,
yeah. I'm talking
but yeah, as far as in the Midwest and north, there's yeah. just not there. As,
which is not that big a deal,
no,
probably.
No, yeah. probably. That's I mean, you have enough in that time
are.
Zone. It's not
yeah.
It's not about how far north
you got TCU, you got Baylor, you got Texas schools, obviously. So,
yeah
do you think that's – what do you think of the idea of basketball becoming a bigger revenue generator? And is your mark maybe ahead of the curve on that one by thinking that way?
Yeah, I think you just got to think of everything, and if you're not in the SEC or Big mm-hmm. Ten right now, right? Just think of all the things that can make this conference stronger and get you more money.
Yeah,
because that's where you're at. And yeah, I mean, that's not the route the SEC and Big Ten need to go. But for the Big 12, if you feel like they're going to add value to what you bring to the table, absolutely go after a team that just won a national championship or a team that's consistently
been in multiple championships,
been in championship games. Yeah, Gonzaga, who's been to the championship game,
two times.
Yeah, and so you know, find those kind of schools if they want to be a part of it. Then fine, you know, Gonzaga doesn't offer you a lot, I don't think, other than basketball. Obviously, I think that's probably would be the lowest on my pecking order of all mm-hmm. the teams we've been discussing. But yeah, I think if you can add that, then it makes your conference stronger. There's no question.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Gonzaga is looking for something that might bolster
absolutely
their resume as a legit and elite basketball program.
Absolutely. San Diego State's still being mentioned out there, and that would be a West Coast time zone. You know, that's Yarmark wants four time zones. I think he's going to get it. It's just a matter of who's going to be the dancing partner for the West. He's going to get that fourth time zone.
Mm-hmm.
I listen. I in Brett Veach, I trust.
Honestly, Brett Yormark, Brett Yormark has as much of my trust as Brett Veach does, to be quite honest with you, because he's saved this conference. He's made it a solid number three behind the big kahunas and the Big Ten and the SEC. He's aggressive. He's super, I mean, not proactive. He's super proactive. All these ideas he has, he thinks outside the box. He understands marketing. He's been in various professional sports organizations, even including NASCAR, for crying out loud. This guy gets sponsorships. He gets marketing. He gets entertainment value. He understands time zones. He understands TV slots, which is what drives this whole thing, as we know, is TV contracts and money. And he also understands the streaming aspect. And that's something I hope people didn't overlook when I mentioned that. He talks about how streaming entities are going to be a bigger thing down the line. And that's where he sees the opportunity to tie into and be known as the premier basketball conference in America. That's what he's shooting for. Mm-hmm. And right now, a lot of people think the Big 12 is the best conference in America. But you add Gonzaga and UConn, and then you have Kansas, and you have Baylor as good as they are. And Kansas State's certainly been played great this past year. And I'm leaving out probably a couple teams as well in the Big 12 that can certainly compete or be right up there. Houston, left them out. They were number one seed last year. I mean, the Big 12 would clearly be the dominant premier conference in America when it comes to basketball. And could you benefit from that? Yeah, I absolutely think you could. So I think Yormark is, some people may disagree with his theories or philosophies, but what has he been wrong on so far?
Not I can't much. Think of anything.
I can't either. Enjoy your rest of the day. 8-Man All-Star Games coming up Saturday.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com. North Central Kansas' country station, KD Country 94, is KDNS Downs, Beloit, Kansas.
KD Country 94 weather.
Here's a look at your local weatherology forecast. Sunshine mixed with clouds at times today, with daytime highs approaching 89. Southwest winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Lows dip down to about 65 tonight, partly cloudy skies. Partly cloudy again tomorrow, chance for scattered thunderstorms, daytime highs approaching 89. From the Weatherology Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki on KD Country 94. Currently, it's 76.
Call Simps Fertilizer and Chemical in Osborne today and find out what many of your neighbors already have discovered, that Simps Fertilizer and Chemical can save you money. 1-800-821-4289.
Simpson Farm Enterprises carries the Apache line of sprayers, and there's a reason. In fact, there's several reasons.
What's next?
Yeah.
Because if they got billions upon billions of dollars, why wouldn't they go after a soccer league? Why wouldn't they go after Major League Baseball? Why wouldn't they go after the NBA? I mean, where does it end? Now, golf is a more widely known sport across the world, so this one makes sense to start with.
And but not I'm a just lot of here. Established stuff right. like we were talking about off the air yesterday, right. too, like players' unions and things right. like that. There's no, that doesn't happen in right. golf, so it's easy to right. to be like, hey, throw this money at these people because there's no cap or there's nothing that...
There's no players' union.
Some players' union is going to stick right. up for this guy.
You're right.
And you can't leave and go to this league.
Right. Right. However, I think money can trump any, even a union can eventually sure. can be trumped. But I think there is a little bit of a dangerous precedent that I'm worried about there. But this is crazy, crazy stuff. It's, boy, yeah, I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall in that meeting yesterday. Holy shnikes. All right. Anything else on that?
No.
Okay. Well, the Big 12's interest in recruiting Pac-12 teams remains. Adding Gonzaga, basketball only, and UConn full membership is dominating Big 12 conversations. The Big 12 continues to wait for the Pac-12 to reveal, as the whole world, to reveal a new media rights figure to its members before taking the next step in that pursuit. Meanwhile, the Big 12 has been aggressive, more aggressive lately, and pursuing their basketball interest, especially after last week's Big 12 spring meetings. Commissioner Brett Yormark reiterated that expansion has been discussed. There has been mutual admiration at the presidential level between Gonzaga and the Big 12. However, there is stronger momentum for UConn, the reigning men's national champion, to join the Big 12 than Gonzaga at the moment. Yormark has a distinct long-term basketball vision, one that ultimately includes separate media rights contracts for basketball and football. That's never been done, at least in the modern era of the Power Five. Basketball has always lagged behind in valuation, with the football being the primary revenue generator. But Yormark believes, with the interest of streaming properties on the rise, college basketball will be worth more to more suitors in the future.
There are those in the industry who disagree. One key issue to consider, any movement in separating media rights would have to wait at least 7 years until the Big 12's new media rights deal expires in 2031. UConn is entering year four in its return to the Big East, would reportedly owe the Big East at least $30 million in exit fees if it went to the Big 12. That's for an athletic department, reportedly $53 million in the red already. So that makes you wonder, how's that going to work? What do you think of this thought process for your Mark? I think, to me, real quickly, is he's trying to add as many powerhouses in basketball. He's building it so that he can do what he wants in 2031. Or, they say 2031. Well, the other deal hadn't expired, and he renegotiated and did a new deal. So when they say, well, they can't do no until 21, that's bullcrap. You can do something before 2031. Absolutely.
They act like all these years are just like set in stone.
They're not.
I mean, if that was the case, Oklahoma and Texas wouldn't be leaving.
That's exactly right.
I mean, it's you can't. Listen, I know that the UConn athletic department, whatever, $50-some million in debt, and you'd add a $30 million exit fee, whatever. Big 12 will figure that out if they really want them.
Sure,
right? Any conference, if you really want them, is going to figure out that money. Yeah. It seems like a lot, and it is a lot of money. Like for us, it's like unreal amounts of money.
Yep.
But for the landscape of where college football and basketball and college sports are right now, it's not. They'll figure it out with TV deals. They'll figure out how, hey, we're going to take this from you this year, but you know, in 2 years, you're going to make all of this money and probably double, maybe triple of it back because we're going to have a bigger brand, we're going to have mm-hmm. a better brand, mm-hmm. and you're going to make this money. So you can, if you can talk with your schools that are part of your the member institutions in your conference already, mm-hmm. and say, hey, it's going to suck losing maybe $5-10 million this year, but in 3 years, you're going to make 50 more, and it's like, okay, I think we can make the conception. We can concede that for now. I love any type of expansion you can have that's going to make the conference better. Mm-hmm. And so I think the going about it that way is the right way. And what's interesting to me is like UConn's already applied to join this league, this conference, mm-hmm. and it's like these teams that have, and you know, I think Cincinnati did it before they actually were approved when mm-hmm. Brett Bielmar came in, and they, you know, teams left, and then. But this was before Oklahoma and Texas had left. I get that, but I don't think when Bob Bowlesby was there and they sent that big old call out, you know, to have people submit their applications to join the conference, I don't think they did a lot with that. I don't think they looked a lot at it because they had Oklahoma and Texas and they didn't care. Mm-hmm. And so now it's like, okay, well, we're welcoming UConn now. We have a different regime. And it's just interesting to see some of these old schools that are coming back in and have such a better chance to get in now. Without Oklahoma and Texas, but can also strengthen the conference and get you a better TV deal.
Well, think about this for a second. There report the other day that Colorado and Arizona are going to join the Big 12. Now, that's not done yet.
Yeah.
If, in fact, that were true, though, and then you and Gonzaga would join on for basketball, now Gonzaga would have Colorado and Arizona and BYU. They would have teams out their way to play, mm-hmm. okay? So it wouldn't likely be traveling all the time everywhere. If you add UConn in, that would be football and basketball across the board, whereas Gonzaga would be basketball. Mm-hmm. UConn don't have a great football program, so that doesn't help a lot. But if you add UConn and Gonzaga, obviously you got a West time zone. There's your four time zones. And then now think about the geography of the Big 12. It would go from Gonzaga, Spokane, Washington,
yeah.
all the way to Connecticut, down to South or Central Florida, and then West Virginia. I mean, you just start doing the whole thing, and you're like, holy cow. The only thing you don't have is, you know, to the north, I guess, because you don't have Nebraska
anymore. Yeah, you go.
Which is that big a deal?
Cincinnati would probably be the furthest north, I guess.
That would be.
And obviously, Cincinnati and West Virginia is a good fit to have some rivalries to build here. Mm-hmm. They're close to each other.
Yeah.
But yeah, you go north. I guess north would be northwest too, to Spokane, Washington.
Yeah,
as far as in the Midwest and north, there's just not there.
Which is not that big a deal,
no,
probably.
No, yeah. probably. That's I mean, you have enough in that time zone. It's not.
Yeah.
It's not about how far north you
got TCU, you got Baylor, you got Texas schools, obviously. So,
yeah
do you think that's what do you think of the idea of basketball becoming a bigger revenue generator? And is your Mark maybe ahead of the curve on that one by thinking that way?
Yeah, I think you just got to think of everything. And if you're not in the SEC or Big mm-hmm. Ten right now, right?
Just
think of all the things that can make this conference stronger and get you more money.
Yeah.
Because that's where you're at. And yeah, I mean, that's not the route the SEC and Big Ten need to go, but for the Big 12, if you feel like they're going to add value to what you bring to the table, absolutely go after a team that just won a national championship, or a team that's, you know, consistently
been in multiple championships,
been in championship games. Gonzaga, who's been to the championship game.
Two times.
Yeah. And so, you know, find those kind of schools. If they want to be a part of it, then fine. You know, Gonzaga doesn't offer you a lot, I don't think, other than basketball, obviously. I think that's probably would be the lowest on my pecking order of all the teams we've been discussing. But, yeah, I think if you can add that, then it makes your conference stronger. There's no question.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Gonzaga is looking for something that might bolster
absolutely
their resume as a legit and elite basketball program.
Absolutely. San Diego State's still being mentioned out there, and that would be a West Coast time zone. You know, that's Yormark wants four time zones. I think he's going to get it. It's just a matter of who's going to who's going to be the dancing partner for the West. He's going to get that fourth time zone.
Mm-hmm.
I listen, in Brett Veach, I trust. Honestly, Brett Yormark has as much of my trust as Brett Veach does, to be quite honest with you, because he's saved this conference. He's made it a solid number three behind the big kahunas and the Big Ten and the SEC. He's aggressive. He's super proactive. All these ideas he has, he thinks outside the box. He understands marketing. He's been in various professional sports organizations, even including NASCAR, for crying out loud. This guy gets sponsorships. He gets marketing. He gets entertainment value. He understands time zones. He understands TV slots, which is what drives this whole thing, as we know, is TV contracts and money. And he also understands the streaming aspect. And that's something I hope people didn't overlook when I mentioned that. He talks about how streaming entities are going to be a bigger thing down the line. And that's where he sees the opportunity to tie into and be known as the premier basketball conference in America. That's what he's shooting for.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, a lot of people think the Big 12 is the best conference in America. But you add Gonzaga and UConn, and then you have Kansas, and you have Baylor as good as they are. And Kansas State's certainly been played great this past year. And I'm leaving out probably a couple teams as well in the Big 12 that can certainly compete or be right up there. Houston, left them out. They were number one seed last year. I mean, the Big 12 would clearly be the dominant premier conference in America when it comes to basketball. And could you benefit from that? Yeah, I absolutely think you could. So I think Yormark is, some people may disagree with his theories or philosophies, but what has he been wrong on so far?
I can't think of anything.
I can't either. Enjoy your rest of the day. 8-Man All-Star Game's coming up Saturday.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.